listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
It's story time with Sarah Day, and I feel like it's been a while. We've had so many exciting things happening that I don't think I've told a story in a while.
It's been too long. I feel like I want to sit cross-legged on a carpet somewhere.
For this one, I think you definitely should, because as I was researching this one, it's totally a once upon a time in a land far, far away. Ooh. There was a princess kind of story for a little while, at least.
Okay. Excellent. I can't wait. Please tell me there's a happy ending. Is there a happy ending?
Yes. Yeah.
Is it one of those divine happy kind of answers?
No, I just had to think about what happens at the end of my script. But no, it's all good.
Okay, cool. Let's go.
I mean, there has to be some tension in the story.
Of course.
Or it won't be interesting.
That's true.
Happy, that is so true. Yeah. Okay. Tell us a story, Sarah.
Okay. So I don't entirely remember exactly how this episode idea even happened, but I'm pretty sure I was looking through a list of female saints mm-hmm. that we could talk about because mm-hmm. I was trying to think of somebody interesting to tell a story about. Mm-hmm. And I ran across Elizabeth of Hungary. And in typical Sarah fashion, I didn't read all that closely about the dates associated with her name. And I realized I made an error because I thought that her saint day is May 25th. And I got super excited because that's my birthday. And I was like, oh, I share a saint day with Elizabeth of Hungary. It's not her saint day. No. It's her canonization day. And those are two different things.
Oh,
so
okay.
I decided to run with it anyway because I started to research her story and I realized I needed to still write this episode because there were connections that I did not see coming.
Okay.
Her saint day. So if you look in our Lutheran service book, she is a saint in our Lutheran service book.
Okay.
If you go to that front little section that has feasts and festivals and commemoration days, she is listed there on November 19th, which is not anywhere close to May. But we do actually have...
That's her half saint day.
Yeah, almost. Yeah, very close. So we do have her saint day commemoration on November 19th in the Lutheran church. So that was kind of the entry point to this of like, she's a saint. We actually do talk about a little bit because of her life, which I will get to.
Okay.
So maybe not as poetic as I wanted it to be, but she has some really interesting Lutheran lineage that happens completely unexpected as I research this. So who was Elizabeth of Hungary? If you do a quick little internet search, you'll see that she is quite famous in the Catholic Church. Now, obviously, we have very different beliefs about how we remember and talk about the saints. We in the Lutheran Church thank God for their witness, and we look to them as a pattern for how to live our lives faithfully toward others, and that's about where it ends for us. But we do regard them highly as people who have gone before us in the faith. Elizabeth was born in 1207, so this very much predates Lutheranism, which is why she's not a Lutheran lady, because it didn't exist as a church body at the time.
Hard to be a Lutheran lady before Luther.
Correct. Like a few hundred years before Luther. In Sárospatok, Hungary, although this isn't like 100% certain, it's generally listed as Sárospatok. It could be Pozsony, Hungary, which is modern day Bratislava, Slovakia, which is all kind of in the general same area of the world, or Obuda, Hungary, because she lived in the 1200s. We can't be entirely sure, but fairly sure. If you're unfamiliar with your Eastern European geography, do not fear, because I'm going to give you a little perspective of where we are today. So Hungary is bordered by Slovakia and Ukraine to the north, Austria to the west, Slovenia, Croatia, Bosnia and Herzegovina, and Serbia to the south. I don't know if this is helpful to anybody, but I love looking at maps. And Romania to the east. So that Eastern European area. Sárospatok is in the northern part of Hungary, just south of the Slovakian border, not too far west from Ukrainian border. It is almost exactly 1,000 miles due north of Athens, if we all know where Greece is, and about 1,000 miles due east of Paris. So that's where we are in the 1200s. And I don't know why I wrote all... I was really into my geography when I was researching this a few days ago. Sorry, guys. 1,000 miles is about... I really wanted to set the stage for you. 1,000 miles is about the distance from St. Louis where we are to Boston or Miami, or like overshooting a drive to New York City by just a little bit. And then I was really mind blown at how huge our country is. But that was a different rabbit hole for a different day. So the bits of medieval history are just very interesting to me. I find it really, really interesting that Hungary was never part of the Holy Roman Empire, which kind of plays into her history and the fact that she was canonized pretty quickly. The empire tried to conquer it a few times, but Hungary was a very independent sovereign kingdom from 1000 AD onward, kind of a buffer between the Ottoman Empire and the Holy Roman Empire, although that's a little bit after Elizabeth's time. I don't know enough about medieval history to speak with any authority here, but I do find it very interesting to see how royalty from many places like thousands of miles apart all intermingled. So St. Elizabeth, I'm telling you all this because she is of royal lineage. Her lineage includes France, Antioch, which is in Turkey, Jerusalem, Germany. So even at this time, her lineage, her royal family was very expansive across a lot of different countries.
Wait a minute, isn't Antioch in Syria?
It's on my map, it's in Turkey.
Maybe a different one.
Mm.
Oh, which you're right, it's in Turkey.
I think that came up before and you corrected me that it's in Syria, but it is actually in Turkey.
It is historically in Syria, but according to today's borders, it is just like a few miles from the Syrian border.
Yeah, it's like nestled in
there. I love maps right too, here. Sarah. It should be in Syria, but it is not. You're right. It's in Turkey.
It is in Turkey.
I learned something new today.
Hey. There we go. So another interesting fact, at least to me, was that when I was looking her up, there are two very lengthy Wikipedia pages for St. Elizabeth. One of them is St. Elizabeth of Hungary, which is the main one that shows up when you search for her in English. The other one, which I had to translate from Hungarian into English, only because I was very in deep with these Wikipedia rabbit holes at this point. I think I had about 10 tabs open researching things, is for St. Elizabeth. As you do. St. Elizabeth of the Árpád dynasty, because if you are of Hungarian descent, you would consider her from her royal lineage, not necessarily the fact that she grew up as a princess in Germany, which she does.
Mm. Wait, so is this like our first princess story on Story Time with Sarah?
Quite possibly. I mean, she's not actually labeled a princess, but she is royalty.
Okay.
She is royalty. Yeah. So those two pages have mostly the same information, but also when you're talking about someone who lived over 800 years ago, not everything is going to be consistent.
True.
And one of the pages was translated into English and there were definite things that I was like,
that doesn't line up.
No, they were giving her a he pronoun. And I was like, oh, that's not accurate. So I was picking the things that were accurate.
I bet that's also like a Hungarian is, I bet that's a hard one for Google.
I kind of want to learn it now, but that's an entirely different side quest. Not for today. Anyway, okay, sorry.
Sarah goes to language school.
Once I have Portuguese mastered, we'll do something else. Anyway, so the bottom line here is that she is a very highly revered saint in the Catholic Church. Even the Lutheran Church makes her a saint in our Lutheran service book for commemoration. So she was the third of five children born to King Andrew II of Hungary and Gertrude of Morania, which was a Bavarian house of Andechs royal family. So she was born of German and Hungarian royalty. So she is actually, I guess, a princess. So, first princess story, I think. The children were baptized in Buda, apparently with a lot of pomp. And her brother later became a King Bela IV of Hungary. There was just a lot of royalty happening in her family. At the age of four, at the request of Count Hermann I of Thuringia, which is in Germany, she was brought to Thuringia, specifically Eisenach and then Wartburg, which sound very familiar to our Lutheran ears, to be betrothed to the Count's son at age four. One article says that she was first betrothed to the older son, Hermann, who then died before they were married. But at any rate, she became betrothed to Count Hermann's son, Louis the Fourth. I guess there's French in here, too. So I'm not sure if it would be Louis or Louis. I don't know.
Well, but if he's German, it'd be Ludwig. So
it would, but it's written as Louis. So I'm not sure.
All right.
How that would be pronounced, because there were other French in Antioch. There's a lot of intermingling happening here. Anyway, obviously, this would reinforce political alliances between these two families. That's kind of the whole point of why they would have these marriages between big royal houses. Elizabeth and Louis were married in 1221 when she was 14 and he was 23. And the same year, he was enthroned as a Landgraf of Thuringia. And it was apparently a very happy marriage, which is great. They had three children, Hermann in 1222, Sophia in 1224, and Gertrude in 1227. And I had to look up what a Landgraf or Landgrave was, because this is a very unfamiliar term to me, but it shows up many times in this story. It's this level of royalty over a specific territory. So it's a land count who governs a significant, often inland territory, has high level judicial authority. The term was actually used up until World War II. I don't know why I'd never heard of it before, especially in Thuringia. It's a comparable position to a duke. So it's just one of the ruling classes. The Franciscan friars arrived in Thuringia in 1223, and Elizabeth learned about the teachings of St. Francis of Assisi, and she started to live by them. So she fasted a lot. She flogged herself, but she gave many, many alms to the poor. And her husband apparently didn't mind this, which was good for her. And maybe, I don't know if that was normal for a royal person to be okay giving away all of this money to the poor, but that's what she did. And her husband apparently was okay with it. He was okay with it partially, probably because he thought it would earn them eternal rewards. And this is the life of the church at this time, maybe still today in some parts of the Catholic world. He is venerated as a saint in Thuringia, but he was never canonized by the church. So he's like a local saint, but not like a globally recognized saint.
Can I just say, ladies, that one mark of a good man is that he is totally on board and supportive of your piety and your acts of service and generosity.
Yeah.
That this is like, what a dude.
He sounds like he was a great husband, which I feel like isn't always the case with royalty. Like,
you get some stories, certainly not in the Middle Ages.
Yeah. You get some stories of some not great people, which one of them comes up later. But yeah, like not great people who just like really have a lot of power over people and use it in not very nice ways. So, oh, here we are, the person. Also around 1223, priest and later inquisitor, aka not a good dude, Conrad von Marburg gained a lot of influence over Elizabeth when he became her confessor. I did not entirely look up what that means, but it's some sort of authority over her as part of the church.
It's like her personal pastor, spiritual director. He would be the person that she would make confession to. And yeah, it's a spiritual mentor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It sounds like there was some abuse of that power going on too, to a certain extent, but he was an inquisitor. So this becomes important in a minute. So Conrad really loved intense asceticism and suppressing heresy with great zeal. He did not like heresy, which if you're becoming an inquisitor, that is kind of part of your job. So he generally would assume guilt without even bothering to prove innocence. In 1231, Pope Gregory IX gave him permission to ignore standard church procedure for investigating heresy. And he teamed up with a few others in Upper Rhineland to burn as many heretics as they could with barely any trial. So that was the state of heresy at the time. You basically were just burned even if people were lying about the fact that you were a heretic. So in 1225, Louis was sent to represent Emperor Frederick II in war. And Louis had been a really staunch supporter of Emperor Frederick II. He had represented him in a few significant meetings. So Elizabeth had taken over the household affairs while he was gone and had distributed alms, as she does, and given away state robes and ornaments to the poor. So she was very concerned about looking after the poor with all of her means. Mm-hmm. She tried to heal the land from plagues and famines that had happened while he was gone. She opened the granaries to feed the poor. She lived a very frugal life. People thought she was wasting things, but apparently Louis approved of what she was doing, which is great. In September 1227, just before their daughter Gertrude's birth, Louis unfortunately died of a fever in Italy while he was en route to join the Sixth Crusade. Yes, these were the Crusadiers. Mm. They were attempting to recapture Jerusalem and the Holy Lands. And Louis's death was very hard on her. She was only 20 and very pregnant at the time. And she supposedly said, quote, "It is to me as if the whole world died today," end quote. Mm. Poor thing. Louis's brother, Henry Rasp, became regent for Herman, Elizabeth's eldest son, and he did not treat her very well. After this battle over her dowry, because Henry and Conrad von Marburg, who was her confessor and had a lot of authority over her, apparently refused to let her manage her own property for a while, she eventually won her dowry back and then moved from the court at Wartburg to Marburg in Hesse, which is how I ended up down a rabbit hole, because I was like, wait a second.
I know those names.
I know the name Hesse. We've talked about that somewhere. And so I Googled Hesse in all of my story time episodes. And that is how we end up with the end of this episode. But we're not there
okay.
yet.
Oh. Well, a little preview. Okay. A little foreshadowing.
Yeah. My brain was like, there's something there. And there is. But we'll get to that in a second. So this move was possibly influenced by Conrad von Marburg's strict dietary rules. Remember, he was strict in asceticism. He had very strict dietary rules that couldn't happen at Wartburg. So it could have been something like that. She had made solemn vows to Conrad, kind of like being a nun, including celibacy and obedience to Conrad as her confessor and spiritual director. So when you're royal, vowing celibacy is a bit of a problem, because royal families like to have royal babies and royal marriages with other royal houses to, you know, for political alliances and the continuation of your royal line.
Well, and can we also say when you're royal, vowing obedience is also troublesome?
Correct. Yes.
Because you're supposed to be the one that makes the final call on things.
Yes.
You're in charge. You can't delegate that.
Right. Yeah. So her family wasn't super happy about that. Her relatives held her hostage for a while in a castle so they could try to force her to remarry. But she did not. She was like, I made a vow. And she apparently even threatened to cut off her nose so no man would find her attractive. So she was,
oh my goodness,
she was dedicated to her vows to Conrad. And Conrad apparently treated her incredibly harshly, sometimes with physical beatings and holding her to very impossible behavioral standards.
Ladies, if your pastor beats you,
Run away.
Run far away. Elizabeth of Hungary, my dear.
Yeah. Doesn't sound like she had she lived a frugal life and probably was, I don't know. That's a very different time. Mm-hmm. Very different. In 1228, Elizabeth built a hospital at Marburg for the poor and sick with the money from her dowry. And she herself, as a royal person, cared for the people there. So this is where a lot of her sainthood comes from, because of giving to the poor and caring about their physical needs by building this hospital. So miracles are attributed to her. She is still the patroness of the Third Order of St. Francis. She is a symbol for Christian charity, which makes a lot of sense, and the patron saint of charities, hospitals, and widows, among other things, for people who have patron saints, which we don't really do. But that's where all of this comes from. Elizabeth's daughter, Sophie of Thuringia, married Henry II, Duke of Brabant, and became the ancestress to the Landgraves of Hesse, which are future Lutherans, because she won Hesse in the War of the Thuringian Succession. So Elizabeth died in Marburg at her own hospital in 1231 at the age of 24. I think it's very poetic, speaking of poetry here, that she built a hospital and then she died there.
It's poetic. It's also tragic. And did you just say she was 31?
24.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's worse. 1231 was when she died. She died at the age of 24.
Yeah. A very tragic and poetic story.
Okay, where's my happy ending, Sarah? You promised me an happy ending.
I know.
So far.
Because she cared for people. That's part of it. But I'm getting there. I'm only halfway through.
Okay. All right. Please tell me it gets better.
So miracles, of course, were said to have happened around her grave, because this is what happens in the medieval church. She was very quickly canonized by Pope Gregory the Ninth in May of 1235.
Yeah, because he felt guilty.
Maybe. I'm really curious how she died. It doesn't say, but like if you're working in a hospital, I'm guessing she just caught something. And
or the fact that she'd been like fasting and had worn down her own strength with probably strict asceticism.
Yeah.
Left her a sitting duck for anything in the hospital. I mean,
quite possibly. Yeah. I mean, plagues were so common at this point too.
Yeah. We know she didn't die in childbirth.
That's true. That is true. She is usually depicted with roses because there is a story that this bread she was carrying to the poor turned into roses when she was questioned by either her husband or her husband's brother, depending on the story you read. But like, it's this idea of God's providence that like, they didn't want, that God didn't want her to be caught doing something that they didn't think was right. And so when they asked her what she was carrying and she like opened her coat to show what she had underneath her coat, it was roses. It wasn't the bread that she was giving to the poor. So that's why if you look up pictures of Elizabeth of Hungary, she is shown carrying roses. In Marburg, the Teutonic Order that she was associated with built St. Elizabeth's Church on the site of Elizabeth's tomb in the 13th century. It's one of the earliest Gothic churches in Germany, which is very cool. The church was actually built on top of her hospital. So it's the same site as the hospital that she built. In 1234, the Teutonic Knights got the hospital from Conrad of Thuringia and they began expanding it. And then the next year, 1235, the year that Elizabeth was canonized, Pope Gregory IX granted the church authority to issue indulgences. Welcome to pre-Reformation church. And the cornerstone was laid that year. So Elizabeth's grave stayed where it was in the original hospital chapel. And then this huge church was built on top of it. And you can still go visit it, which is kind of cool. In 1236, her body was moved to a new bejeweled shrine in the presence of Emperor Frederick II. And construction continued through the consecration of the church in 1283, but the towers were not finished until 1340. Learning about old churches is always just an incredible thing because they don't build them in like 5 years. They build them in like 100 or 200 years. And they're just these huge pieces of construction. It's just really cool. So the landgraves of Hesse were also buried there from 1240 to 1509. Elizabeth's bones were a major pilgrimage draw to Marburg, but Philip I, Landgrave of Hesse, and a major player in the Lutheran Reformation, would not have it. Philip demanded that the Teutonic Order in Marburg to give him Elizabeth's bones so the pilgrimages to the relics would stop. And so her skull and a few bones were moved to St. Elizabeth Convent in Vienna, which I believe they're still there. The skull reliquary of St. Elizabeth is... Oh, they're not still there. Sorry. They're in the Swedish History Museum in Stockholm. So if you want to go see these things, you totally could. And after the conversion of Philip, Landgrave Philip I in the 16th century, the church became Protestant and remains part of the Evangelical Church of Kirchen-Waldeck. If you look it up, it is a fully functional church still, which I just think is super cool. Like that's some real old church history there. There's a whole lot of history there and you guys can look that up on your own. So this was the part that just kind of blew my mind. In Genesis and Matthew and these other places in the Bible, you get these really long genealogies and you're like, well, this is just a list of names. Like, what does this really mean? But like they show God's faithfulness to the generations and how this whole lineage of Jesus has so many interesting people and stories. And this was a genealogy that I was not expecting to find when I started looking up Elizabeth of Hungary. And this is what I found first before I wrote the rest of her story that made me decide that I actually just needed to tell you guys the story. So we've established that one of Philip's ancestors is Philip I, Landgrave of Hesse. He is really, really significant in the story of the Lutheran Reformation. And I don't have time to tell his entire story here. So I have a couple links to put in the show notes to a CPH book titled Philip of Hesse, Unlikely Hero of the Reformation, which he absolutely was, and a Reformation 500 article about him. And according to that article, Philip of Hesse, as we call him in our Lutheran tradition, made his greatest mark on the Reformation through his real political and diplomatic prowess. And his crowning achievement was the creation of the Smalcaldic League in 1531. So like, this is the happy ending of all of this. He was super, super influential in what ended up happening in the Reformation. He did have some strange personal struggles with marrying multiple women, which he did actually do against the advice of, you know, the Lutherans at the time. He asked them if they thought it was okay. And they're like, no.
Yeah. But as soon as you said Philip of Hesse, I was like, that guy?
Yep.
The one who was like, yeah, let's reform the church so I can be a bigamist. That one?
Yeah, that one.
All right. Yeah. Happy ending. I'm with you. Okay, got it.
Real important. Important and also flawed. Yeah. You know,
of course. As people are. As many other great men have been throughout history.
Yeah. Here we go. I forgot about this part. So one of Elizabeth's direct relatives ends up being Philip the First. But that isn't where it ends. Okay. And this is the part that blew my mind. So one of Philip's sons is George the First of Hesse-Darmstadt. One of George's sons is Louis the Fifth, Landgraf of Hesse-Darmstadt. One of Louis's sons is George the Second, Landgraf of Hesse-Darmstadt. And George's daughter, along with Sophia Eleanor of Saxony, who is the daughter of the elector, is Anna Sophia the Second, Abbess of Quedlinburg. And she wrote Lutheran service book 589, Speak, O Lord, Your Servant Listens. She's the one that lived at the same time as Emily Julianne von Schwarzburg-Brudelstadt, who we did an episode on a while ago. And that blew my mind. So we have a direct line from Elizabeth of Hungary to a hymn that we have in our hymnal today that we sing.
Amazing.
I know. My mind was blown. So that is actually the happy ending.
And of course, Philip of Hesse also, he was the driving force behind the Marburg colloquy and several other, you know, major Reformation events. But yes, you're right. She is the mother of reformers. And honestly, that's a good thing because she could have used some reform in her own life.
Yeah.
She got the worst end of medieval spirituality.
Yeah.
Heavy.
One. Yeah. That was all suffering and giving and sacrifice and no grace and no restraint. And she tried to lean into it as hard as she could. Mm-hmm. And probably it killed her.
Quite possibly.
But what a dear, dear woman who just was so loving to her family, so dedicated to the Lord, so generous with all of her possessions. Mm-hmm. Like it seems like the only battles she ever fought were to be able to have the freedom to give more.
Yeah.
Great lady.
That's a cool connection that you found.
Isn't
that you
it?
Discovered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Surely other people have figured this out.
I'm sure they have.
Oh.
I
don't know.
Very clearly.
I don't know. I looked, so I Googled their names together and nothing comes up. So surely I can't be the only person that has realized this, but I don't know.
That's other people. It's cool. It is very cool to see this just line of family succession going on down through church history.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A saint in the 13th century is directly connected to us today in the LCMS. It's just wild.
We're singing the song of her descendants.
I know. Singing the song of our people. So we appreciate the example of Elizabeth living as somebody who cared for the poor and who gave a lot of her time and possibly her life to care for people. And, you know, we live out our vocations caring for people today, too. We also can thank God for the preservation of all the saints in our history and our Lutheran forefathers providing for them who we are connected to through all of our theology and our doctrine and the confessions and hymnody. So I hope you've had as much fun romping through history as I have. The end. They all lived maybe happily ever after.
Well, I think Elizabeth's happily ever after is still going on to this day because she is almost certainly around in that great heavenly choir around the throne.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm not sure if I would call any part of that story a happy ending. That's why we hope in Christ. Because
the ending is really, Sarah was so happy to have discovered the connection. It wasn't really for the characters. It was for the discovery of the musical history.
Yeah.
Sarah, I'm happy you're happy. And I'm happy Elizabeth has found is living in the peace and joy of the redeemed.
That's right.
However, a lot about that story was just not tragic.
Yeah.
Straight up.
True. Uh-huh. That's true. But we have a beautiful hymn because of
Yes, we do. Just beautiful. Well, thank you for digging this up, because I think I had heard little bits and pieces of that story before, but not in this great of detail. And it makes me really love this woman.
Yes.
This sister in Christ who lived so long ago, who had some very misguided influences on her spirituality, but nonetheless gave it everything she had and really
Yeah.
Really just wanted to give and serve and love and is an inspiration to us today.
Yeah. That's all I got. Nice, short, sweet. We've got some links for if you want to read some more about Philip of Hesse. He's got an interesting story. He is a very unlikely reformer with his his background and how he even like got into the Reformation. It's just interesting. So there's a couple of, there's a book and an article if you don't want to buy a book. There's an article if you want to read more about them. That's it. You can join our Facebook group, the Lutheran Ladies Lounge on Facebook. Tell us if you love this story or just found it really sad, which is fine. Or you can join us on our Instagram at Lutheran Ladies Lounge. You can find all of our episodes at kfuo.org/Lutheran Ladies Lounge or on your favorite podcasting app or on the KFUO radio app. You're listening to the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Erin.
And I'm Rachel.
Views and opinions expressed on the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast may not represent the official position of the management or ownership of KFUO Radio, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The Lutheran Ladies Lounge is produced by KFUO Radio and available at kfuo.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and leave a review for us too. If you love the Lutheran Ladies Lounge podcast, consider financially supporting our producer, KFUO Radio, so we can keep doing what we do. Find out how at kfuo.org/give. Well, I might be using the term royalty incorrectly because we live in America and I'm not even sure what that means, but she is of of the
royal descent,
upper ruling class of society.
Oh, okay.
So to me, that's royalty, but I'm probably using that term wrong.
Noble.
Noble. Yes.
We can definitely.
Her blood is bluer than the newest.
And then,
oh, I'm going to look up. No, I probably can't say that rest of that line from My Fair Lady on air.
Oh, no, she is royalty. She's a daughter of a king.
There we go.
I was second guessing myself, but yes, she is actually the daughter of a king.